So now everyone sees Krishna, right, in the sky. We were telling yesterday, the sky is blue because it reflects Krishna's effulgence. So this is what Prabhupada has given us, so many things. I told another one yesterday at what's it called? Harinamadesh. Yes. So again, we just have a few classes. So today I was going to talk about Srila Prabhupada going to Vrindavan, to Radha Damodar Temple. And as we all know, we should all know, Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan is very special. And it's where Prabhupada retired to in around 1960 as a sannyasi. And there he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, and also doing Bhagavad Gita. And he would sit there, and you can see pictures where he would look through that window, the grilled window, and he could see Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And Srila Prabhupada always said that he got his inspiration to spread this Krishna consciousness movement through Srila Rupa Goswami. So when I became Prabhupada's servant, that was just after John Mastami of 1972, and Prabhupada was headed to Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan for the month of Kartik, which that year started October 15th and of course went for 28 days of the lunar calendar, the month of Damodar Brat. So he would sometimes talk about that we were going there. This was a month before, but Prabhupada was very conscious and very excited to be going back to Vrindavan. And this was the first time he was going to stay there for such a prolonged period, for 1 month, and the entire month of Kartik. And it was the only time he did it since the time he left. So it was a really special time. And although Prabhupada had many different things going on, one of them was there was lots of difficulty going on with the project in Juhu, the land project in Juhu. There was many difficulties. But Prabhupada still went into Vrindavan and stayed there for the 1 month. And I remember on one flight, Prabhupada, as I said, he was sitting at the window. This was on the right-hand side of the plane. And he said to me, when we get to Vrindavan, he said, every day we'll have class from Nectar of Devotion, which of course was written by Srila Rupa Goswami. And he said, you will read. He said to me, you'll read from Nectar of Devotion. He said, then I'll stop you sometimes and I'll give commentaries. So he had it all worked out what he wanted to do. And I was very excited. I was going to get to read, you know, in front of all the devotees, and Prabhupada would stop me. And he said, and the classes will be in English. He said, for my Western disciples. In other words, he was going to India, but he wasn't going to speak in Hindi or in Braj to the locals. He said, the classes are for my disciples. So part of it, as I look back, was Prabhupada really wanted to show everyone in India, and particularly in Vrindavan and these holy places where there were many Vaishnavas, that his Westerner disciples, they were first-class Vaishnavas. They weren't to be considered anything less than a Vaishnava. It wasn't that they were Western Vaishnavas, you know, or as many of them at that time, some of them still do, but at that time, some of his god brothers and others, they considered us just to be very fallen malecha, that we're not qualified to be devotees, not qualified to be Vaishnavas. So Prabhupada wasn't shy about it, that these were Vaishnavas, and this was by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, of course, and the mercy of his spiritual master, and of course by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that he was training us as devotees. So his idea was to go into Vrindavan and just have this nice big festival right there at Radha Damodar Temple. And there were over 50 or 60 devotees that had come from Europe and America. They were all from Europe and America. And so Prabhupada arrived there on the very first day. Rather, for the first day of Kartik, Prabhupada We went in, and this was, of course, my first trip out of the country. It was certainly my first trip into Vrindavan, and now I'm Prabhupada's servant for just 1 month or so. And we get to Vrindavan and you know, go into Radha Damodar Temple. And I remember at that time there was the Goswami, his name was Gurachan Goswami. And he came down in the family lineage, you know, holding that temple for the last hundreds of years. Now his grandson, he's the Goswami of the temple, just by birth. And of course, these are one of the things that Prabhupada was showing, that this was not what a devotee, it wasn't by birth, it was by qualification. We were devotees by qualification. And simply to come down in a lineage didn't mean anything. It was not by birth, it was by qualities. But Gurachan was an old man with big, thick glasses, and he liked Prabhupada. They had a nice relationship. And so when we got there, and Prabhupada went up to the altars, and everything was closed, but they did a big ceremony, and they opened the curtains, and there was Radha Damodar deities, and Prabhupada offered his obeisances, and then they closed the curtains, and they opened them again, and they took out, piece of Govardhan, and it was a footprint. I think it was a footprint, Krishna's footprint. And Prabhupada mentioned, he said that if you circumambulate with Govardhan here at Radha Damodar, it's just like going around all of Govardhan Hill, which if you've been to Govardhan, that's a very long walk. So this way you could just go in the courtyard of Radha Damodar Temple and circumambulate Govardhan. And he said it would be the same result. So then Prabhupada went into his rooms. He had two rooms there. Again, if you've been there, he had a nice sitting room. Just small. Everything was very small sitting room, and his bed was behind him. And then there was a little veranda that was raised up from the temple area. The veranda was raised, and then it went to his kitchen area. And that kitchen area was also where Prabhupada sat and did his translation work, where he would look at Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. So I was just very overwhelmed being in Vrindavan for the first time after practicing Krishna consciousness now for a year and a half. So now I was right there at Radha Damodar Temple, and it was just amazing. And there was monkeys jumping around on trees and parrots flying, green parrots, and there were always two, male and female flying together in the trees, and it was just so beautiful, and you could hear peacocks. And one thing that happened was, of course, I went and saw Jamuna, Gurudas and Jamuna. They were in charge of Vrindavan project at that time. Gurudas was president, and there was no real temple yet, but he was in charge of, and Jamuna was there. So together they were working and helping establish Vrindavan as Krishna Balaram Mandir had begun construction. And Jamuna, of course, was the cook in all of ISKCON. She made so many cookbooks, and Prabhupada showed her how to cook in the very early days. And she spent 1 month with Prabhupada's sister learning how to cook Bengali. And so she was expert. So I didn't know it. Every day I was cooking for Prabhupada up until this time. It was one of my main services. So now Jamuna was there. So she was cooking lunch for Prabhupada. So all I had to do was give him massage. I didn't have to worry about that cooker in the kitchen cooking away, boiling everything away. So that was okay. So I gave Prabhupada his massage, and then I laid his cloth out, so Prabhupada bathed, and then he got dressed and put on his, as he would every day, put on his tilak and said his Gayatri mantra. So instead of having to get plates together and do all these different things, I didn't have anything to do. So I just sat on the veranda, and I'm chanting. In Vrindavan, it's very easy to chant japa, so I'm just sitting there chanting japa. And Prabhupada walked by me, I offered obeisances, and he went into the kitchen. I had only looked inside. There's that screen door was there. And he walked in, and disappeared into the kitchen. And I could see Jamuna sitting on the floor, and she's rolling chapatis. And it was just like Vrindavan scene, you know, she's rolling chapatis on a little round piece on the floor there. And she just has a bucket stove. It was literally a bucket that was formed with clay, and there was cow dung on it, cooking everything. It was just amazing. So I was looking in, and I'm chanting, and I chanted for a few minutes, and I just couldn't sit any longer, so I just got up, and I walked over to the door, and I looked inside. I just wanted to see what was going on, and there was Prabhupada. When I looked inside, he was right in the very corner where he would sit every day and do his translation work and take prasadam. So he was sitting there. So I opened the door and I looked in, and Prabhupada looked, and he said, "Have you taken prasadam?" And I said, "Oh no, Prabhupada." I said, "After you're finished, I said, I'll take with the devotees." And he was already sitting down, and his plate was in front of him. And he said, "No." He said, "Come." He said, "Sit down, take prasadam." And I said, "No, Prabhupada, you know, we never." Prabhupada always ate alone. He never had someone sit with him and have prasadam. So I just said, "No, Prabhupada." I said, I'll eat with the devotees." He said, "No, no." He said, "Come sit down." So I said, "Okay." So I came in, I offered obeisances, and Prabhupada just sitting on the floor on a straw mat, and he's got a table like this, a nice thali in front of him. So I sat down beside Prabhupada, right there, Radha Damodar Temple, in his rooms in Vrindavan. Prabhupada described these rooms. He said that his rooms in Vrindavan, he called them the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world. He said these rooms in Vrindavan were the very center of the spiritual world. He said because it's from this place that the Krishna consciousness movement began. He said with Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, so that's how special his rooms are in Vrindavan. So now I'm sitting right next to Prabhupada. I never did it again. 2.5 years. It was my one and only time that he allowed me to do that. So I'm sitting next to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's eating this nice prasadam. And Jamuna was very efficient. She puts another thali together and puts it in front of me, and she's rolling chapatis, and now just like I was doing every day, bringing chapatis one at a time to Prabhupada, now she's bringing Prabhupada a chapati, and she'd bring me a chapati. And she's going back and forth making chapatis very efficiently, and I'm taking prasadam with Prabhupada at Radha Damodar Temple. And I started tasting what she had cooked, and I realized I didn't know how to cook. Everything she made was just so delicious, you know, just, it was transcendental. It was so, I was eating very happily, eating my chapatis and dal and rice and these sabjis. It tasted so special, you know, everything tasted so good. And Prabhupada's quietly eating next to me. And no one said a word, not one word. We're just eating and eating. And it went on for 15 minutes or so. And then finally we were finished. I had to finish. And Prabhupada was finished. And he looked at me and he said, "So," he said, "did you like the prasadam?" I said, "Oh yes, Prabhupada, very much." He said, "Good." He said, "Now tomorrow," he said, "you cook for her." And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And of course, that day didn't come. She wouldn't let me cook. And it wouldn't have been good for her if I had cooked, because her cooking was much better than mine. But Prabhupada made the point that, you know, we don't accept service from each other. That's not our business, is to take service from one another. And he said, Prabhupada would say so many times, we call each other Prabhu, master, which was very special. It was very, this word Prabhu is not something that in India, no one calls someone Prabhu. It's very reserved for very high position. But Prabhupada had us use it with one another all the time, men and women. Prabhupada would call his disciples Prabhu. Sometimes he would say, "Go get, you know, Karunda Prabhu," and even he would say Jamuna Prabhu. So sometimes he would address us in this way. And he would say, "What is the question, that you accept service from your master?" Not that, you know, just like we'll say, Prabhu, go get me, you know, go get me a glass of water. So we call them Prabhu, and then we say, go do something, he said. So this is not Prabhu, you know. So he made that point. But that was a very, you know, that was my first day in Vrindavan. So all these things happened in my first day. So then every day, Prabhupada was giving this Nectar of Devotion class, and Prajumna did the reading. I missed that opportunity of reading there in Vrindavan, but Prajumna was doing it. I just used that Ur machine to record his classes, so that was my service while he was speaking. And there were about 50 or 60 devotees, and Prabhupada very much concentrated on expressing how Krishna consciousness was for everyone. One could be qualified, anyone could be a Vaishnava, it didn't matter whether you were coming from Hindu body or Muslim body or European or American body or black and white. So he was letting everyone in Vrindavan see his Vaishnavas, his Western Vaishnavas. And of course there was no guest house. There was nowhere for the devotees to stay. In ISKCON, Prabhupada had his two rooms, and we stayed with him, his secretary servant and Sanskrit editor. We had a room there at Radha Damodar. But the devotees, they had to just find where to stay. So they were staying in a place called Fogala Ashram and Keshigat Palace. There were rooms in these places where the devotees would stay. And as we know, the first thing Prabhupada always did was build guest houses. In India, Prabhupada didn't start by building temples. He didn't build the Krishna Balaram temple and the Mayapur temple. He built guest houses for his disciples so that they would have somewhere nice to stay. Prabhupada always thought about his disciples. And he knew his Western disciples were not so inclined towards austerities. And it was very austere in India in those early days. So he built guest houses, and he said, if you have a place for devotees, he said, the temple will come. He said, you give the place for the devotees, he said, and naturally a temple will come. You know, not that you make a big temple and then hope to fill it up. First you take care of your devotees, then devotees need facility. So Prabhupada was always very keen on seeing, and he would tell the leaders, make sure they have cow's milk. This was a big thing in India, that we could get cow's milk, not buffalo milk. And that they had nice prasadam, that they had nice milk. But at this time, everyone was kind of on their own to find facilities. So during the day, you never saw the devotees. They didn't congregate around Radha Damodar because they were taking care of all their bodily necessities, which... in India, that's what you do. You know, you can spend a good portion of your day just getting your laundry clean and keeping yourself clean, trying to be healthy. And if you're not healthy, you stay very close to the latrine, you know, because we were always getting dysentery and malaria and jaundice. This was all the time, you know. It's, when you read in my book, you'll see I didn't like India very much. I was always sick in India. But so during the day, you didn't see the devotees. They were just trying to survive, taking care of themselves while in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada would just be, you know, sitting in his room during the day. But one day he was sitting there, and he looked out, and there was one of his ISKCON devotees. It was obvious it was an ISKCON devotee. He was white. And he's walking around in Radha Damodar temple chanting. So Prabhupada rang his bell, and he said, who is that, you know? I said, I don't know, Prabhupada. He said, call him, you know. So I called him. It was a big fellow, you know. And he comes in. I said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So so he goes in, and we offer obeisances. And Prabhupada said, where are you, you know, where are you coming from? Prabhupada didn't recognize him. And he said, oh, he said, my God brother and I, he said, we're preaching. He said, in South India. He said, in distributing books. And Prabhupada said, okay. He said, and what are you doing after the festival? Because we were all, at that time, no one was independent, you know, of a temple. Everyone, every brahmachari, brahmacharini, grahastha, whatever it was, you were with a temple and you had no money. And if you went to India, it was because you were sent there by the temple. So no one just was traveling on their own, going to this temple or that place. But this boy seemed like he was kind of independent, even in 1972. So Prabhupada said, "What are you doing?" He said, "After the festival." And he said, "Oh," he said, "we were thinking that maybe we would go to Vietnam to preach." And Prabhupada's eyes got very big. He said, "Acha?" He said, "Vietnam." And he said, "Yes, Prabhupada. Vietnam was like Iraq. You know, in 1972, there was this war that had been going on for years in Vietnam, and Americans were killing everyone and getting killed over there. And there was a big controversy about it. But it was a very dangerous place. It was a war zone." So when Prabhupada heard it, he became very enlivened. He was going to preach in Vietnam. And Prabhupada looked and he said, "Maybe you should take sannyas." And then the boy, he was like, this boy was 19 years old, you know. He was a devotee for 2 years, same like me. He was the same age as me. He was younger than I was. He was 19. And he became kind of surprised. And then Prabhupada looked and he said, "Well," he said, "you should think about taking sannyas." He said, "And what you can do is," he said, "you go before Srila Rupa Goswami." He said, "You sit in front of his samadhi," he said, "and chant japa and ask him his question," he said, "and then see what he says." So Prabhupada gave him a question. And then every day, so this devotee is going there and he'd sit with his godbrother and they're sitting and of course, you know, they're waiting to hear what Srila Rupa Goswami would say to them, and they would come back and he told Prabhupada, "Well, this is what they felt," you know. And then Prabhupada said, "Now go in front of Krishnadas Kaviraj's samadhi and you ask him this question." So he did this day after day. So finally, after 4 or 5 days, Prabhupada said, "Okay," he said, "take sannyas." Because Prabhupada was also going to have a big fire sacrifice there, Radha Damodar Temple, right in the courtyard, Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And this was, again, besides just the activity, he was showing everyone. Prabhupada was initiating sannyasis right there in Vrindavan. His Western disciples was giving him sannyas. He was giving first initiation, second initiation. I think he gave sannyas to like 6 devotees. And he said, "So," he said, "we'll have a fire sacrifice," he said, "on Rasa, on the night of Rasa Leela, on the full moon night of Rasa Leela." He said, "We'll have a fire sacrifice at Radha Damodar," he said, "in the courtyard." He said, "And you'll get sannyas there." And the boy said, "Yes, Prabhupada." You know. And he said, "So tell my secretary, Shamasundar," he said, "to take you to Lohi Bazaar." Big bazaar. And he said, "You have to get new cloth and bamboo for your danda." He said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So he left the room and he goes and he finds Shyamasundar. You know, Shyamasundar is a devotee since 1967, so that was 5 years. And he says, "Shyamasundar," he said, "Prabhupada said, you know, I'm getting sannyas. You have to take us to Lohi Bazaar to get the cloth." And Shyamasundar laughed at him. He said, "You're not getting sannyas, you know." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Prabhupada didn't say anything to me," Shyamasundar said. And he said, "Yes, Prabhupada said, he told me to come to you and to tell you to go." He said, "Well, he didn't say anything to me." So, of course, then Shyamasundar goes to Prabhupada because he didn't believe this boy. Because he was just this boy. No one even knew who these people were. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, they're getting sannyas." So then he went and he got his cloth. And in the meantime, the other devotees who were getting sannyas, they became a little disturbed because they had been devotees for 4 years, you know, five years. They were what do you call them, veterans, you know. They were veteran devotees. And they were saying, "Who are these kids?" You know, one of them was like, "Who are these kids getting sannyas? They don't even know any slokas. You know, they can't give class. They don't, They don't know slokas from Bhagavad Gita. How can they be getting sannyas? So all this little revolution undercurrent was going on, but Prabhupada had decided that they would get sannyas. So despite the grievances of others, it went on. So that night, night of Krishna's dancing with the gopis and the full moon was there, and Prabhupada had a big fire jagya and gave sannyas to his different disciples, and these two boys, they also got sannyas. Their name was Paramahamsa. Became Paramahamsa Swami and Parabhajakacharya, and they were friends. And after the ceremony, Prabhupada told Paramahamsa, he said that Srila Rupa Goswami personally attended the fire sacrifice. He said, and Narada Muni came to the fire sacrifice. Prabhupada would say that some of Narada Muni, he came to many different programs that Prabhupada had conducted in ISKCON in the early days. But he said that this program, Rupa Goswami and Narada Muni attended. So they were very happy to see this Krishna consciousness being spread all over the world. This is what everyone had wanted, and Prabhupada was doing it. And he was doing it right then. You know, it was happening right at this time. So at Paramahamsa, we became very good friends some years later. If somebody wants to go, you can get one of the books in my room. I'll show you a picture of Paramahamsa Swami. But so after that, of course, everybody wanted to know what happened if Paramahamsa went to Vietnam. So I asked him just a few months ago. I met him in San Francisco, and I said, so did you go to Vietnam? He said, no. He said we couldn't get a visa for Vietnam. Of course, there was a war going on, so it wasn't very easy to get, just like trying to get a visa to go to Iraq now, you know, these things wouldn't happen. So he was, he said, no. He said, but he said, we did go to, he said, we went overland and we went through Afghanistan. He said, and then we wound up in Iran. And he said, we almost got killed a few times, he said, in Afghanistan. And then they wound up in Iran, and his godbrother, Parabhajakacharya, he actually became the yoga teacher for the Shah of Iran. At that time, the Shah of Iran was in power, and his daughter was into yoga, and he became the teacher to the Shah's daughter. And this is... I said he was a big boy. That's our Paramahamsa Swami. So, but this is what was going on in Vrindavan at this time. So, as I said, he was, at this time, he's like 21 years old. This was 1974, that picture. And as what happened was, he became Prabhupada's secretary. And so he took sannyas in October of 1972. So now 2 years later, he became Prabhupada's secretary. And I was still Prabhupada's servant at this time. So at that time, we got to know one another. And I mentioned that yesterday afternoon in the class, when he became Prabhupada's secretary, it was funny because he was criticized early on. He didn't know any slokas. So he became Prabhupada's secretary, and Juhu, and Prabhupada, of course, would ring the bell, and I would go in, and then he would say, get Paramahamsa. So now that was his secretary, Paramahamsa. So I'd get Paramahamsa. So now Paramahamsa would throw himself down on the floor, big body, and offer obeisances, and then he would chant slokas in praise of the spiritual master, you know. So now he knew his slokas. And then he would start chanting different slokas. And so this went on for a few days. And then by the third day, he went in and offered obeisances, and he's starting to chant Sanskrit prayers. And Prabhupada said, get up. He sat up, and Prabhupada said, how are we going to get any work done with you lying across the floor, you know? So they didn't do that anymore after that. But we had many nice times together in the service of Srila Prabhupada. And one of the very funny times, as I said, from the very beginning, the thing that I liked so much about Prabhupada was his ability to laugh, you know, his sense of humor. Prabhupada was very funny. And Paramahamsa and I, of course, we were funny in our own way. Prabhupada once said about me, when they asked about my being a temple president in Hawaii in 1975, he said, Prabhupada laughed. He said, "Shrutakirti, he's too easygoing. To be a temple president, you have to be a little, you know, you have to be a little tough with the devotees." And he knew that wasn't my nature. He said, he didn't say it was a fault. He just said I was easygoing, so I wasn't good material for a temple president. So Paramahamsa, he was also easygoing. And being with Prabhupada as we traveled around was very exciting. And of course, we were very busy and going to so many places. And sometimes it was a little tense as you're just trying to do your service for Srila Prabhupada. But Paramahamsa and I, sometimes we would have some relief. And one of the things we would do, as Prabhupada was going to different temples, of course, kirtans were always very ecstatic. Right? Whenever Prabhupada was there, kirtans were always ecstatic. But in Prabhupada's presence, the devotees were always in ecstasy, so chanting was very nice. And the temples were always packed. Wherever Prabhupada went, there would be 100 devotees, 200 devotees or more in the temple room, just chanting in ecstasy, and Prabhupada would be playing his kartels. And we were with Prabhupada every day. So I guess our vision sometimes was a little skewed. Mm-hmm. But we would sit in the temple room or stand at the kirtan, and he would be on one side of the Vyasasana and I would be on the other. And we just would do silly things. So one of the things we would do was look at the devotees in the temple as they were chanting to see who looked the most ecstatic, you know, by their faces, who had the most ecstatic face. And then, you know, he'd be looking around and then he'd look at me and he'd go, like, you know, look at that devotee, he's really in ecstasy, you know. And then I would do the same thing. I would find someone and go, you know, and we would laugh. And as the kirtan was going on. So anyway, this is some of the things we did. So we're in Mexico. We're traveling around and this is like 8 months later, we're together and Prabhupada's in Mexico and I'm giving him massage outside on a veranda and the sun shining down. Prabhupada liked the morning sun and the sun shining on his back and I'm massaging his back with mustard oil. And so the secretary very often would come in with mail. That was like the time to come in with your mail and you would read it to Prabhupada and then he would dictate to you and then you would compose a letter. So, I don't know what happened, but that day, we're outside, and Paramahamsa comes in, and he's got this big body with that big round face, and he comes in, and he offers obeisances, and he sits up, and he looked at me. Paramahamsa looked at me as I'm massaging Prabhupada's back, and he just smiled, and when I saw him smile, for some reason, I just started laughing. I just couldn't help but laugh at seeing his face, you know. And I start laughing and laughing, and I'm massaging Prabhupada. Well, as soon as I started laughing, Paramahamsa, he just lost it. And he just started laughing. And he's laughing and laughing. And when he started laughing, of course, I started laughing more. So pretty soon, I was just standing or sitting behind Prabhupada and my hands, I couldn't even massage him and tears are coming out of our eyes and we're both laughing hysterically for no reason at all. And then I start massaging Prabhupada and then all of a sudden I hear, "What's so funny?" And Prabhupada was right in the middle of us as this was going on. And he goes, "What's so funny?" And I'm looking at Paramahamsa. He's a sannyasi, you know. He's the elder here. And I'm like, "Say something." And Paramahamsa is just like this. Now no one's laughing now, you know. We stop laughing very fast. and I'm massaging Prabhupada. And finally I said, Prabhupada, I said, I don't know. I said, sometimes when I just see Paramahamsa, I said, I laugh. And I didn't know what else to say, so I just told him what happened. And Prabhupada said, laughing is a Vaishnava activity. So we're like, that's good. And so now I'm massaging Prabhupada, and Paramahamsa's still sitting there in shock. And Prabhupada started to speak. And he said, when I was young, when I was a very young boy, he said, sometimes I would take walks with my father, and he would go along the Ganga. He said, and staying at the Ganga, he said, there are many Paramahamsas who would live right at the Ganga. And we're just listening, and I'm massaging, and Paramahamsa's listening. And he said, my father, he said, he was always giving offerings, huh? He said, to the Paramahamsas. And of course, he would ask them, you please bless my son. You know, Prabhupada said, bless my son to become a servant of Srimati Radharani. And we're listening. And he said, sometimes when my father, he would see these Paramahamsas, and he would give them offering, and sometimes he would give them ganja. And like, now we're like really listening, you know, because we never heard anything like this in our whole lives. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, sometimes the Paramahamsas, he said, they'll smoke a little ganja, he said, to help control their senses. And then he said, but not you, Paramahamsa. And then Prabhupada starts laughing and laughing, and he's slapping his knee. So he made a joke out of Paramahamsa, and he's laughing and laughing. And Paramahamsa and I are just sitting here like, we're like completely dazed, you know. I think, where did Prabhupada come up with this story, you know? So I never ever told that story for 25 years. I could never, Prabhupada's father giving ganja to Paramahamsas, you know. So then I talked to Paramahamsa a few years ago. And it was very funny because Prabhupada kept calling, he kept using that name, Paramahamsas, giving it to the Paramahamsas, because it was Paramahamsa was right in front of him. He didn't call them sadhus. And he always says sadhus. He would always say the sadhus at the river, you know, or his father would give something to the sadhus. But he chose that word, Paramahamsas, because from the beginning he knew what he was doing. So because we were laughing over nothing, and Prabhupada said it was a Vaishnava activity, he wanted to show us that he could laugh too. So Prabhupada told this really funny story, and he laughed more than we were laughing. But I still couldn't really understand the story so much. But when I talked to Paramahamsa, he said, Shruti, he said, you know, he said, I became a devotee, he said, I was 17 years old. He said, and I'd never even been with a girl. He said, I never had a date, nothing. He said, but when I became a devotee, he said, I have one big attachment. He said, smoking marijuana. So Prabhupada knew, you know, not only did Prabhupada tell a story and make a joke, but he knew what Paramahamsa's problems were, you know. He knew his attachments. So he just pointed it right to him, you know. Said, not you, Paramahamsa, you know. So it was, he gave an instruction. So Prabhupada did everything all at the same time. But he kept using that word, Paramahamsa. And I'm thinking, what are Paramahamsas? He never called anyone Paramahamsas, you know. But he did it so he could make that joke. So then he laughed even more. So he showed Vaishnavas, laughing is a Vaishnava sport. I think he said swimming is a Vaishnava sport as well. So these are some of the Vaishnava activities we can do. So everyone understand that story? Not confused by it, are you? It's not a prescription to smoke marijuana to control your senses. That doesn't work. So we went on, Paramahamsa and I. We had a nice time with Srila Prabhupada for several more months. And I can tell if there's no questions, I'll tell you some more stories. But if you have any questions at this time, anyone has any questions? Everyone's fixed in Krishna consciousness today. Okay. So We did this nice tour, which we're going to talk about that this afternoon at the feast. Prabhupada's going to Mayapur. That was also very nice. But then this other tour we took with Prabhupada took us into Australia and Fiji. It was just Prabhupada, Paramahamsa, and myself. So when we get into Australia, Australia was a very nice place. It's kind of like England in a way. They have lots of milk products. You know, and milk was very inexpensive. And as I saw in England, they have double cream and clotted cream. And it's just, they're very nice milk products. And as devotees, we like milk products. Krishna likes cows, and we like cows and butter. And so when we got into Australia, the first thing in 75 was Prabhupada stayed in Perth, Australia, which is on the west coast of Australia. And it's like a beach town. It's a resort area. And there was no temple there. They were finishing the temple in Melbourne, so Madhavisa arranged for Prabhupada to stay there for 1 week and rest. The idea was Prabhupada would rest. So that was nice. We always liked that idea. As soon as Prabhupada was walking up the driveway to this cottage that had been rented for him, he said, you can arrange for professors to come and students to come. Prabhupada was going to preach. That was his resting, was preaching from this facility there. So, as I said, and I was cooking, there were just myself, Paramahamsa, and two brahmacharis that Madhavisa had arranged to stay there to help us out. So there were just the five of us staying in this house. And I had, the refrigerator was filled with all these nice fruits and vegetables and then all these milk products. So every day I was cooking for everyone. We were eating very nicely. And one day we were having these big lunches. So Prabhupada had lunch and we had lunch. And we had been traveling, day going here, going there. So Prabhupada took rest after lunch. So, of course, we all laid down after lunch, after a big, big opulent meal, and fell asleep. So eventually, I heard a bell ring. And it was one of the couple of times it happened to me. So I heard this bell ringing and ringing and ringing. So I woke up. And again, I went into Prabhupada's room and I offered obeisances very slowly so I could try to wake up. And I'm, exercising my eyelids. And I sat up because I didn't want Prabhupada to see me, all sleepy looking. And I sat up. And of course, immediately Prabhupada just started yelling at me and said, I've been ringing this bell for hours. He said, and everyone is sound asleep. He said, you're all sleeping like dead men. Then he started. That was just the beginning. Then he would start. And his voice was high, loud. And he's there. Everyone is working. All the karmis are out working very hard, he said, to enjoy their sex life. He said, but the devotees are sleeping very nicely. He said, just like dead men, eating and sleeping. He said, the devotees simply eating and sleeping. He said, where is everyone else? What are they doing? And they're sleeping, Prabhupada. He said, yes, all the devotees are sleeping. He said, worse than karmis. He said, the karmis are all working at least. He said, but not the devotees. They have a very nice life. They can just eat and sleep. He's just gone on, and I'm just, my head's down. I'm, yes, Prabhupada. And he said, call them. I thought, oh, Krishna, And usually it would be kind of fun to call someone when you knew they were going to get yelled at by Prabhupada. you know how that feels when it's not you getting yelled at, and someone else is give it to him. But I felt bad because Prabhupada really, he was really upset. And these were just young brahmacharis. They were bhaktas. And I was upset, and I went in and I said, Paramahamsa, I'm waking up. Prabhupada wants to see. I said, he's really mad, because we're sleeping. And then I went over to these brahmacharis and I said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And they were all like, oh, they were excited, they didn't know it was going to happen. And I couldn't even tell them. There was no way to prepare someone for when Prabhupada was angry, you know. So then we all go into Prabhupada's room. We were all just woken up. I guess we had eaten a lot or something. I don't know. It was all that sour cream in the vegetables. And all off our base. And immediately Prabhupada starts yelling. Everyone is the same thing, you know. Prabhupada was really good. All sleeping like dead men, and these boys were like, you know, they didn't know what happened, you know. And Paramahamsa, he had heard it before once or twice. So, and we're just sitting there, and just, you just wanted it to be over, you know. It was just horrible, and Prabhupada yelled at you, you know. And he's going, just sleeping like dead men. He said, "Karmis are better than you. You're worse than karmis," you know. He said they're working hard, and he said, "So, if that's what you want to do, sleep." He said, "Go on." He said, "Go sleep." He said, "Get out of here." And he told us all to leave. So we all walked out, offered obeisances, and we left. Now everyone's sitting in the room chanting. No one's sleeping anymore. We're all sitting there chanting, trying to chant japa in anxiety. And then the bell rings again. And Prabhupada said, he said, "Bring them in." So I bring them all back in, and we all sit down. And Prabhupada said, "Get a book." You know, behind him there was a bookshelf, and the only books we ever had were Prabhupada's books. It wasn't like there was other books; it was his books. So Prabhupada said, "You know, get a book." He said, "And read." So the devotee said, "Which book?" Prabhupada said, "Any book. Just get a book." So he got a book like Bhagavad Gita, and opened. Prabhupada said, "Read." You know, where? Anywhere. You know. The devotee started reading, and then Prabhupada stopped him, and he gave an explanation. And we passed it to the next boy, and then he would read, and Prabhupada would speak. So we just made everything all nice. You know, everyone felt happy, and Prabhupada showed us what we should be doing, which is what he wanted. He didn't want to see us falter in Krishna consciousness. Maya is very strong and very tricky, and very gradually she. Gradually gets you, you know, and then all of a sudden you're just gone. But in the beginning, it's just little things that creep into our sadhana, our practice in Krishna consciousness. So then he made everybody feel all good, and we could understand that he loved us, so we were very happy. So then in the evening, one of these teachers comes from a high school to see Srila Prabhupada. They had arranged for, you know, a meeting. So he was a young man, and he was a little interested about what Prabhupada was doing. So it was Paramahamsa and myself, we're sitting there, and this teacher comes in, and Prabhupada's talking to him about Krishna consciousness. And he was really into this mood in Australia, and he kept talking about, you know, of course in ISKCON, Prabhupada wanted to make first class men, Brahmins. He wanted to train up first-class men. And he said, there are no... So he's talking to this man, and he's saying, there are no first-class men. He said, this is third. He said, everyone is third-class. You know, there's not even second-class. He said, everyone in society is third-class. And he said, not even third-class. He said, fourth-class. And he's just gone on, and he's just preaching, you know. And he said, you know, he said, they're not even fourth-class. He said, everyone, he said, there's fifth-class man. And he said, and you're also a fifth class man. And this man was like, he was listening to Prabhupada. And Paramahamsa and I are sitting there thinking, wow, Prabhupada's so heavy, you know. And he said, and you're also fifth class. He said, but we're trying to make first class. And the man says, well, he said, you know, Swamiji, he said, how do I become first class? And Prabhupada said, you have to hear from pure devotees. And he said, well, you know, Where are they? He said, who do you hear from? And Prabhupada pointed to Paramahamsa and me. He said, they're pure devotees. And we're like nudging ourselves. And in the afternoon, we were worse than karmis. But just a few hours later, we had become pure devotees. So Prabhupada didn't say, you hear from me, I'm a pure devotee. So he pointed to us and said we were pure devotees. So we were very happy then too. But we knew we weren't pure. But Prabhupada was very sweet. Any questions? It was all that prasadam last night. All that feasting. We had our Saturday feast. Okay. Well, I'll conclude with one more story then. And this is my favorite story. And it happened at Bhaktivedanta Manor in August of 1973. We'll go back. We'll find a picture of me massaging Prabhupada. So is what happened was, now I had been with Prabhupada for a year. So I knew my, I knew my program, at least I thought, very well. And being with Prabhupada, of course, was always wonderful. And the best part of the day was giving Prabhupada massage. So this was that time. I'm trying to find a picture because it's right there at the manor. Ah, there. So that shows you what it was like there at the manor. So every day, you can see the manor, Prabhupada's room in the manor was, as I said, was bigger than this and very beautiful. It was a manor. It was, their idea of a castle, And had nice leaded glass windows, and the sun would come in when the sun was shining. While Prabhupada was there, every day was beautiful in the summer, and the sun would shine in. And Prabhupada would take massage right on the floor. It was a wooden floor. And I just put the straw mat on it, and we would both be in gumchas. So just like that, I'd be behind Prabhupada, and I'm massaging his back. And, we had used sandalwood oil on Prabhupada's head, and which smelled so nice, and then mustard oil on the rest of his body. So I would just pour a little mustard oil in from the bottle and put it down, and I'm rubbing Prabhupada's back. And then we'd get up and go move to the side. So this day I got up, and I go to move to the side, and I kicked the bottle of mustard oil accidentally, and of course it fell over, and it didn't have the cap on it, which Prabhupada always said, put the cap back on the bottle, everything. Prabhupada knew always what to do. So that day I didn't put it on, so I kicked it and it fell over, and mustard oil starts spilling all over the floor. So of course I'm grabbing it, picking it up, putting it down, and as I'm grabbing it, Prabhupada's yelling, and he said, "You fool," he said, "you'll be intelligent when you're 80 And I became overwhelmed in grief and anxiety. And he said, "Go get a cup, katori." So I ran out of the room. Don't even know if I offered a basin. So I just ran out of the room. And there was a little kitchen just outside his quarters. And I got a katori, just a metal cup. And I came back in, and Prabhupada just sitting there waiting for me. And I came in and I had the cup. And he said, "Now do the same as me." And he just put his hand right in the oil on the floor and just started scraping it into the cup. So for the next few minutes, we're both just blotting our hands like that and scraping it into this cup. And after a few minutes, all the oil was up. There was a little shiny spot on the floor, but all the oil's in the cup. And then he just said, "Now use that oil for the massage." So he made me use the oil that I had gotten off the floor to give him his massage. So now I'm massaging him, and Prabhupada just sitting there, and he's just completely quiet. And there's like another hour of massage to go on. And he would have, I don't know if you've seen that, sometimes Prabhupada, he had a Tulsi gold chain that came down about here, and he would put it around his ears. And it was just like a little garland, a little Tulsi gold garland go around his head. And I was sitting there, and he just had his eyes closed. And I'm rubbing his chest and massaging his arm and his fingers and pulling his fingers. And I'm going on to the next spot. And I just feel tension, It was all coming from my head, but I just feel all this anxiety. And Prabhupada just sitting there and not saying, he's not moving, he's not saying anything. And I just felt terrible because I never like to get yelled at, Like I said, Prabhupada yelled at me like 4 times in 2.5 years. So this was one of them. And I just didn't like it. And I'm just massaging him. And I'm thinking, I have to say something. I have to change the dynamics here. And I could never just say, I'm sorry, Prabhupada, you know, I won't do, I'll put the cap back on. I couldn't come up with a solution like that. Like, I had to think of something witty to try to alleviate this situation and be happy again. So I'm just thinking in my head over and over and over, you know, what to say. And as I'm moving around, and it's just Prabhupada just sitting, he looks so grave, you know. And puts his legs out, and I'm massaging his legs, and he's just sitting there with his hands down, his eyes closed, and I'm still thinking he's really angry with me, you know. And I'm massaging his legs, and I'm massaging his feet. So like another 45 minutes have gone by, and Prabhupada hadn't said one word. So finally I'm massaging his feet, and I said, thank you, Prabhupada. I said, I thought it would take a lot longer for me to become intelligent. And Prabhupada starts laughing and laughing and laughing. He's slapping his knee again. I got Prabhupada to slap his knee. He's slapping his knee and he's laughing and laughing. And he said, yes. He said, we would say that, he said, when we were young boys. He said, if someone did something foolish, we'd say, you'll be intelligent when you're 80. He said, so I've used it on you. But I turned it around into a benediction. See, so I said, I thanked him, I said, because I thought it would take a lot longer for me to become intelligent. So Prabhupada thought that was really funny. So, and I thought it was a great benediction. So now this month I'm 56 years old. When it happened, I was 22 years old. So I have another 24 years. And then I'll become intelligent. So to me, it means I'll become Krishna conscious. That's real intelligence, is to be Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada gave me a benediction in his being funny with me. But I never heard him say, you'll never hear him say that anywhere. But he said it to me, I'd be intelligent when I was 80. So, but he liked, Prabhupada liked it. So when I said it, he just laughed and laughed and laughed. And then that was it. Everything was wonderful. So it was much better than just saying, I'm sorry, you know, that would have, but this, by seeing Prabhupada laugh, that was perfection to me. That was perfection, seeing Prabhupada laugh and slapping his knee. You say that in English, they say that, a knee slapper, you know. So Prabhupada, I got him to slap his knee 3 times, you know. So that's my favorite story, because Prabhupada benedicted me. So I have to live until I'm 80. That's the trick. So my wife, she tries to cook healthy for me so I can live that long. It's kind of a long time, but we'll see what happens. But Prabhupada's benedicted all of us. We just have to, as he said, just step into that sunshine. The benedictions are there. We just have to follow the process. And he makes it worthwhile, and he makes it fun. Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness fun. And that's what we have to understand. This process, as Prabhupada says, is a joyful process. You have to have fun in Krishna consciousness, because we're not addicted to these things. You have to give up these material attachments. Once someone asked Prabhupada what it meant to be Krishna conscious, and Prabhupada said, means to be without anxiety, to be free from anxiety. And that's what I saw in Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't have any anxiety. And why do we get an anxiety? There's 2 reasons. One is because we try to enjoy and we try to control. And that's to enjoy. That's why we try to control everything as controllers, so you can enjoy the material world. But the devotee knows that Krishna's in control. And the pleasure for a devotee is just serving Krishna. So as soon as we realize that Krishna's in control of everything, and all we have to do is serve him, then you can be happy and free from anxiety. But you see, in the material world, everyone's in anxiety. It's a terrible place. And it's getting worse all the time. Go on and on. I don't like to stress all these things in the material world that are there, but as you see, as each decade goes by, it gets so much more difficult. Everything is in England, they have 8 million cameras watching everything everyone's doing. All they do is watch you, you know, in that country. They say every day there's 400 times you're seen on 400 different cameras every day these CCTV, they call it, closed circuit, and they're just being watched by Big Brother. So, you know, and now we have the cell phones. They can know where you are at every second by your cell phone, you know, and talking on your cell phone. So many things. So Prabhupada was freeing us of all this anxiety. Huh? We're just not part of this material world. We want to free ourselves from this. Any questions? Yes.
I would like to know the last question.
Have to think of what the third. Maybe there were just two. As I say, I told you the first one. Oh, the second one. Oh, there is a third one. Might have to save that for, yeah, we'll save that for either this afternoon or tomorrow morning. Yeah. Yes. That was the most difficult question. The others were kind of easy. This one was a little hard for me. Anything else? All right. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.